Malcolm.
Shortly before midnight, he stepped on the plane at the Dallas airport, a tall, thin, balding man of 35, dressed entirely in black. Black shirt, black trousers, black socks, black sneakers.
"Ah, Dr. Malcolm,"
Hammond said, smiling with forced graciousness. Malcolm grinned. "Hello, John. Yes, I'm afraid your old nemesis is here." Malcolm shook hands with everyone, saying quickly, "Ian Malcolm, how do you do? I do maths." He struck Grant as being more amused by the outing than anything else. Certainly Grant recognized his name. Ian Malcolm was one of the most famous of the new generation of mathematicians who were openly interested in how the real world works. These scholars broke with the cloistered tradition of mathematics in several important ways. For one thing, they used computers constantly, a practice traditional mathematicians frowned on. For another, they worked almost exclusively with non-linear equations in the emerging field called chaos theory. For a third, they appeared to care that their mathematics described something that actually existed in the real world. And finally, as if to emphasize their emergence from academia into the world, they dressed and spoke with what one senior mathematician called a deplorable excess of personality. In fact, they often behaved like rock stars. Malcolm sat in one of the padded chairs. The stewardess asked him if he wanted a drink. He said, "Diet Coke, shaken, not stirred." Humid Dallas air drifted through the open door. Ellie said, "Isn't it a little warm for black?" "You're extremely pretty, Dr. Sattler," he said. "I could look at your legs all day. But no, as a matter of fact, black is an excellent color for heat. If you remember your black body radiation, black is actually best in heat. Efficient radiation. In any case, I wear only two colors, black and gray." Ellie was staring at him, her mouth open. "These colors are appropriate for any occasion," Malcolm continued, "and they go well together, should I mistakenly put on a pair of gray socks with my black trousers." "But don't you find it boring to wear only two colors?"
"Not at all. I find it liberating. I believe my life has value, and I don't want to waste it thinking about clothing," Malcolm said. "I don't want to think about what I will wear in the morning. Truly, can you imagine anything more boring than fashion? Professional sports, perhaps. Grown men swatting little balls while the rest of the world pays money to applaud. But on the whole, I find fashion even more tedious than sports."
"Dr. Malcolm," Hammond explained, "is a man of strong opinions."
"And mad as a hatter," Malcolm said cheerfully. "But you must admit, these are non-trivial issues. We live in a world of frightful givens. It is given that you will behave like this, given that you will care about that. No one thinks about the givens. Isn't it amazing? In the information society, nobody thinks. We expected to banish paper, but we actually banished thought."
Hammond turned to Gennaro and raised his hands.
"You invited him."
"And a lucky thing, too," Malcolm said, "because it sounds as if you have a serious problem."
"We have no problem," Hammond said quickly.
"I always maintained this island would be unworkable," Malcolm said. "I predicted it from the beginning." He reached into a soft leather briefcase. "And I trust by now we all know what the eventual outcome is going to be. You're going to have to shut the thing down."
"Shut it down?" Hammond stood angrily. "This is ridiculous."
Malcolm shrugged, indifferent to Hammond's outburst.
"I brought copies of my original paper for you to look at," he said. "The original consultancy paper I did for InGen. The mathematics are a bit sticky, but I can walk you through it. Are you leaving now?"
"I have some phone calls to make," Hammond said, and went into the adjoining cabin.
"Well, it's a long flight," Malcolm said to the others. "At least my paper will give you something to do."